You're listening to a podcast of the Nick Taliaferro Show. Heard here Monday through Thursday, 4 p.m. till 7 p.m. on 900 AM WURD and 900AMWURD.com.
I've had the privilege of meeting a gentleman, and I want to thank Lorraine Nixon, who knows a little bit of everybody and was kind enough to introduce me to a gentleman that she thought I'd be interested in and how right she was. She said that there's a man in the Philadelphia area who is an industrious man and a man of industry and also a man of economics. And frankly, he is really the most interesting man in the world, if you let us tell the story. But he has discovered a protocol and a regimen for treating a disease that has devastated Black people around the world, sickle cell anemia. And without any further words from me, let me introduce you to James Kaplan, who is with us today to talk about this innovative process. And we'll start at the beginning. First of all, James, thanks for coming in. May I call you Jim on air?
Jim is fine. Yeah.
Jim is fine on air. And for those of you who, and most of you, I'm pretty sure, have never met Jim, let me tell you something. You missed a large portion of your life, because here's a guy who's lived a little bit and knows a little bit about how to make life something that's enjoyable. Jim, first of all, let's just tell people, let's acquaint people with you.
Nick, I too want to thank Lorraine Nixon,
yeah,
who's a fabulous portrait painter.
She is.
For introducing us. She's a very special woman.
She brings people together well, too. So, Lorraine, if you're listening, the feathers are going in your cap, the flowers are going in your vase. And the next time I talk to you, you can't say that I haven't been saying nice things about you as often. But the disease of sickle cell anemia, for those who don't know, is a disease that plagues people of African ancestry disproportionately and people of Mediterranean extraction. Tell people a little bit about the disease.
Well, first of all, sickle cell anemia is a horribly painful disease where the patient goes into crisis 4 to 5 times a year, and it takes about 5 or 6 days to resolve the crisis. And they live with the fear of crisis for all the rest of the day.
For those who don't know what crisis is, can you physiologically give us a better picture of what a crisis
happens is? They have a red blood cell that's different than a normal red blood cell. And when their oxygen levels fall to very low levels, that blood sickles. It changes from a biconcave disc, a circular ball, into a sickle. And the sickle will not go through the capillaries of the blood vessels. And the blood backs up, and it causes thrombosis. And it attacks many organs. And it begins at about 18 months of age with those people who genetically have that disposition. And it gets worse and worse. Things have improved in the sense that we're able to keep people alive. The actual life expectancy 40 years ago was about 12 years of age. Today, people live, fortunately, into their 50s, but they never stop having crises and going through the pain. And for anyone who's who is religious, in a sense, when we speak on Palm Sunday about crucifixion, that's one day. These people suffer that condition probably 50 days of the year. I hope that...
Oh, no, look, very helpful. And by way of full disclosure, I want everyone to know that I carry the sickle cell trait, and that my sister, my beloved sister, Phyllis, who is probably, you know, half responsible for everything that I've turned out to be, the other half will be my parents, lost her battle with sickle cell anemia when I was only 21 years of age, and she was only 31 years of age, just about. So I have a vested interest in this conversation. And that brings me to your vested interest in this conversation. We're not talking to Dr. Jim Kaplan, and we're not talking to a man who is of African ancestry. So how does Jim Kaplan, industrialist, become interested in sickle cell anemia?
Well, the word is destiny. Sometimes things happen in your life and you don't know exactly why they're happening. But eventually, if you live long enough, it ties together. I had the good and the bad fortune to live in Germany from 1969 to 72. And while in Germany, I lived in a beautiful village in the Alps. I was fortunate enough to meet a very exceptional German physician by the name of Joseph Issels, I-S-S-E-L-S. You can Google Issels. He's a very special guy. He was part of the German medical establishment, but he was an outsider. He attempted to reverse advanced stages of cancer. And part of his treatment for cancer was to raise oxygen partial pressure in the bodies of those persons who were in a terminal state of cancer. My family manufactured ozone generators for the cross-country shipment of strawberries from Salinas, California to Hoboken. I knew about ozone, but when Dr. Issels invited me to his clinic called the Ringberg Clinic, I had the good fortune to see a medical ozone generator. Now, this is very interesting because I met him in 1970. 10 years later, when Bob Marley was diagnosed with cancer in the summer of 1980, he didn't get treatment, and he let it get worse and worse. And by Christmas of 1980, he was so ill that the only place to send him to try to save his life was to Germany, to the Ringberg Clinic. And it was there that Issels tried his best, but Marley was too far gone.
Gotcha.
Now, I want to tie this into sickle cell disease because it is Bob Marley. It wasn't sickle cell disease that he had, but he had cancer. But Issels knew from the Nobel laureate, Otto Warburg. Otto Warburg was a half-Jewish, half-Christian German scientist who worked in Berlin and was never put in a concentration camp for the whole of the Second World War. He made the following argument, and he got the Nobel Prize for it. He said, the fundamental cause of all degenerative disease is hypoxia, oxygen starvation, at the cellular level. Now, Issels took that and made that part of his situation. Now, I'll go forward very rapidly. In 1988, a very wonderful woman employee of our company would go into sickle cell crisis. I didn't know anything about it, but I got a letter from Dr. Gay at Presbyterian Hospital saying, please excuse XYZ. She has sickle cell disease and she goes into crisis. Not only that, when she's in the office by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, she will have to put her head down on the desk because she's so weak. Mm-hmm. Well, the first letter, I called his office and I said, everything's okay. She's a wonderful woman. We have no intention of making life any harder than it is for her. The second letter, I went back to my library shelf and I found Boyd's Pathology, 1954 edition. And the beautiful thing about 1954 is that a layman like myself, with no great chemistry background, no great mathematics background, could understand the argument. And the key argument with sickle cell disease is when oxygen partial pressure falls below 44 millimeters of mercury, persons with hemoglobin S will experience sickling. Okay, so the whole crux of my afternoon here is when oxygen partial pressure falls below 44 millimeters of mercury, those persons with hemoglobin S, that's sickle hemoglobin, will go into crisis.
So there is a static kind of physiological rule that when the partial pressure of oxygen in the body falls beneath 44 milliliters, is that what
millimeters
of millimeters
mercury.
Of mercury.
That's right.
Okay.
That is a standard. And that's
when the crisis hits you.
That is an ugly but a beautiful thing because this particular disease is going to be a key to the treatment of diabetic gangrene and to a certain extent, old age. If you've ever seen somebody in an intensive care unit and they're over 70 or thereabouts, you'll see a little tube with two prongs on it. Those two prongs are supposed to be in the nostrils, and they're supposed to be delivering oxygen to the patient. Well, I spent 7 days in an ICU last May, and I observed all those old people are laying back on their pillow with their mouths open, and that tube is not in their nostrils.
Yeah, it falls out.
Yeah, they're not getting any
oxygen.
Same
thing happened to me, and I'm not an old guy yet.
Now, you don't need a Nobel Prize to know that the tube should be in the nostrils.
Well, let me get back to that falling pressure of oxygen in a sickle patient. So if the problem is that the pressure falls, and then the physiological response in a sickle cell patient is that the hemoglobin malforms and they can't get oxygen. It seems to me that a remedy would be figuring out how to get oxygen throughout to suffuse it in the system.
You should be at NIH. You're in the wrong place, the National Institute of Health. You and I will go down there. We'll be on the front gate.
Okay.
We'll know how to handle them there. Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, the hemoglobin, which is the red blood cell, which carries oxygen, is a critical variable because in persons with anemia means that your red blood cells die off too quickly.
Okay.
And sickle cell anemia is an anemia. And the cells, which normally should last 120 days, you're lucky if you can keep them alive for 80 days. Now, what happens when a red blood cell dies is that it produces carbon monoxide. It also produces bilirubin, and it also produces iron. But let's just discuss the carbon monoxide. As you know, if you get caught in your garage with your engine on, the carbon monoxide locks onto the four receptors in the hemoglobin molecule, locks into it, and oxygen cannot be carried by that hemoglobin anymore.
Okay.
So the sickle cell patient, in addition to sickling, they experience a faster rate of death of red blood cells. And that means that they're generating carbon monoxide, and the carbon monoxide is then attaching to what little hemoglobin they have left, and they can't carry oxygen. So it's a double whammy.
It's a vicious cycle.
It's a double whammy. It's okay. A bolero.
Okay.
If you were in a dance, you'd be going wild by then.
See, only the most interesting man in the world knows how to do the bolero.
He's referring to Dos Equis, but that's another story.
All right, so now, your background, just so happened, as you said, fate, you have a family that built a company that produced ozone generation material. You meet Dr. Issels, and he shows you the medical application of ozone, and somehow or another, in your mind, these two things come together when you have a worker who has sickle cell anemia, the idea that if I can somehow or another enrich this person, suffuse this person with enriched oxygen, it will cut the crisis.
Right.
How did you go about proving your premise to be true?
Well, I didn't get a lot of cooperation in the United States, and I don't want to dump on any particular hospitals, but I wasn't treated very nicely at Children's Hospital. I won't name any names. And I went around with Dr. Bernard Kirschbaum, who was head of dermatology at Medical College of Pennsylvania. And between him and myself, we couldn't get anybody to try some simple laboratory tests. It wouldn't have cost $100.
Why would a medical facility resist trying something? I mean,
I think that when you're in the depths of a medical profession, you have colleagues. You can't be wrong. Your reputation can't bear going out on the limb and having a limb chopped off. That's one good reason. However, I was at a meeting in New York City, and I saw that the Cubans had treated the eye disease, retinitis pigmentosa, with ozone oxygen in a dose level that I could apply to sickle cell anemia.
Okay.
I got a hold of the Cubans. I said, look, you're a socialist country. I'm not interested in money. I want to prove my point. I was invited to Cuba by Dr. Manuel Gomez and Dr. Sylvia Menendez. I also, when I finally got to Cuba, I had to go through the Czechoslovakian embassy to get into Cuba. I met Ronaldo Wong. Dr. Ronaldo Wong took care of Hugo Chavez, the Venezuelan leader. For many years, they kept him alive for far longer. He had cancer. So I was with Wong in the military hospitals in Cuba. I observed all kinds of procedures there. But at any rate, the Cubans were so dedicated to science. Science was their life. They didn't have golf courses. They didn't go on trips. They didn't play tennis. And when they socialized, it was a night where all the physicians would get together and they'd talk shop. And they did a tremendous amount. And the long and the short of it is, because they had done the toxicity studies that I needed to do, it was then safe to go into clinical trials with human beings. We did our clinical study with 55 emergency room patients as they were presented in the emergency room. And we had 30 tests and 25 control. And we were so successful that within two or three, four experiences, we allowed everybody to get the ozone oxygen treatment because it was so effective. We have the life of the sickle cell crisis. We went from 5 to 6 days to 2 to 3 days. And subsequently, we treated prophylactically. And this is my wish for anyone with sickle cell disease, that at some point they'll be able to be treated as an outpatient prophylactically once every 2 weeks, and they will not go into crisis.
I want to make sure I get this straight. We'll take a quick break and come back and continue. We'll open the phone lines to see if some of you out there would like to ask some questions. If you're like me, you're very interested in these outcomes, and we'll talk a little bit more about why the outcomes taken in Cuba were not necessarily welcomed here in the United States of America. And for those of you who don't know, the Cuban medical system is considered to be superior to the medical system in the United States of America in many ways. You need to read an article that Glenn Ellis wrote about that not too long ago. We're speaking with James Kaplan. Jim is now, am I saying it right when I say that you are the owner of CAP USA?
I'm one of the owners.
You're one of the owners of CAP USA. And all of a sudden, all of the lights are lighting up, so people are going to be asking some questions of you, to you. And even though you are not a medical doctor, your interest, for those of you just catching up, your interest in the treatment of sickle cell came as a result of a chance meeting with Dr. Issels in Germany, with the fact that your family has produced ozone generators, so you deal with using oxygen in practical, applicable ways. And moreover, you had someone who worked for you had sickle cell. And then you went to Cuba. You conducted the test. You have the data. Is that data something that you are able to secure and reproduce and to present to others in this country?
You know, it was published in Townsend Letter for Doctors in 1993. I also gave the paper, against the wishes of the head of the sickle cell department at Children's Hospital, to the 1993 conference at Children's Hospital. I had to get Senator Harkin from Iowa to put pressure to allow me to deliver the
Tom
lecture.
Tom Harkin?
Yeah. Because my colleague, Manuel Gomez, became a man without a country. He left Cuba when he was in Italy and did not go back, and he could not get a visa to come into the United States to give that talk. And they didn't want to allow me to give the talk because I'm not a medical doctor.
Right.
The thing with my background is very interesting. I studied at the London School of Economics, and I audited the course of the greatest philosopher of science, Karl Popper, P-O-P-P-E-R. And Popper was a phenomenal guy. He was an Austrian, had to leave Austria in 1933, and he went to England. But what he said was, no theory is valid unless it can be refuted. It's the linchpin of science. We can talk about beliefs, and we can talk about indicators and so forth. But for it to be science, it has to be able to be invalidated in order to pass the validation test. So I have always had a very strict sense of scientific method. Okay. So whether I applied it in a medical application or some other application, it's part of my thinking. By the way, this is not a complex thing. This is not like using a vector to change the genetics of a human being. This is the simple raising of oxygen partial pressure. Now, in 2011, I was invited to NIH by Dr. Alan Schechter.
National Institutes of Health, for those who don't know.
In Bethesda, Maryland. Alan has known me for 24 years. And he said to me 22 years ago, Jim, we're never going to research your method. I said, why, Alan? He said, because we need the support of the pharmaceutical industry. And right now we're testing hydroxyurea, and then they tested other drugs. But they need the money to sustain the sickle cell establishment.
So the people who normally do the research are kind of fueled by big pharma or pharmaceutical companies. Pharmaceutical companies, like you just said, your treatment isn't something that requires...
When I met with DuPont and Merck, there was a point when they had a marriage. And I met with these guys for about 3 hours. And at the end of the 3 hours, somebody turned to me and they said, can't you put this in pill form? And I look at him and I said, if it works in this form, let's try it. I couldn't get their cooperation either.
Because nobody can really make a lot of money pharmaceutically from the application of your suffusion of oxygen into the system.
Exactly. So these poor sickle cell sufferers have to continue to suffer when there is an alternative method to treat them.
So right now, you have a system that, if applied to individuals suffering from sickle cell anemia, you've proven through tests conducted in Cuba, you have the data to show it, that you cut the sickling crisis in half. And not only that, but that you are able to proactively apply it so that people will avoid going into sickling.
By and large, yes. With medical conditions, you take somebody 22 years old who's had sickle cell anemia since 18 months, they've got a lot of organ damage. I always wanted to work in conjunction with the medical establishment, not against the medical establishment, because you need a total treatment of the patient.
We're speaking with James Kaplan. Jim is here today to tell us about an innovative approach to treating sickle cell anemia patients. By way of full disclosure, I do have sickle cell trait. It has affected me. There was a time, Jim, when they said if you had the trait, it didn't bother you too much, but it has affected me, and I know that it's affected me. But more importantly, it has impacted my family by losing my older sister, who died of sickle cell anemia back in 1978. We lost our sister then. And even now, just thinking about it kind of makes me a little bit misty-eyed. So I have an interest in this.
I've spent time in the clinics. I mean, it's a very moving experience because 7% of the patients present themselves with ulcers, unhealable ulcers of the legs. And many of their friends think they have leprosy. And they have to live with that exclusion.
Has your treatment, the treatment of oxygen suffusion through the method that you have pioneered, has it demonstrated the capacity to heal those ulcers of the legs that are so traditionally associated with sickle cell anemia? Look,
I had one of the most beautiful experiences of my life because I haven't gotten a lot of rewards for this work that I've done. But I was in Cuba and I was invited into the Salvador Allende hospital, Salvador Allende Hospital. And there was a Cuban African woman lying on a table. She was about 22 years age. She was tall. And Sylvia Menendez introduced me in Spanish and translated for me in English. She said, "Mr. Kaplan brought the treatment for sickle cell disease that we were able to heal your ulcers." And she looked at me and she sat up on the table and she grabbed me and hugged me and started to cry, and I couldn't restrain the tears from coming to my eyes. That's one of the greatest rewards I've had with these 24 years of work that I've done. That she, and you could see, she was African, she had light skin that was healing for where those ulcers were.
Right, right. I've seen that. My sister was plagued with that ulcer almost to the day of death, and trust me, I want to see this move forward. We're going to take a few calls, if that's okay with
you,
Jim.
That's okay with me.
For those of you who are just tuning in, we're speaking with Jim Kaplan. Jim Kaplan is an industrialist. He owns a company here, or one of the owners of Cap USA here in the Philadelphia region. But more importantly, he has pioneered an approach and a regimen to treating sickle cell anemia through the use of medical ozone. And if I'm correct, it's not a very expensive deployment when it comes to treating a patient.
Not at all. You could probably treat a patient with a throwaway tube and for $20.
Which shows why nobody can get behind it. If you don't get big pharmacy behind it, you can't get the test done. If you don't get the test done, you can't deploy it. We'll get to the phone lines now. Let's talk to, I believe, Perry in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Perry, thank you for your call, and we welcome you to the program.
No, I'm from Sharon Hill.
Oh, you're from Sharon Hill. Okay.
Yes, I
am reading wrong. I have to take that reading class tomorrow, but it's nice to meet you. And your name, is it Perry?
Yeah, Perry.
I've never met a woman named Perry. Nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you, too. I wanted to know from the doctor.
Jim's not a doctor. He wants you to make sure that he's not a doctor.
Oh, okay.
He's an industrialist. He's an economist, but not a doctor.
Okay. My daughter had sickle cell anemia, and they were treating her at the... She was 7 years old when they discovered that she had sickle cell anemia. They were giving her blood transfusions to separate the blood from the pains that she would have in her arms, her stomach. And anyway, I didn't know anybody else was getting blood and they continued to give her that to the age of 18 years old. And she went to a hospital, Langenau Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
She would go there to be treated. When she didn't go to the children's hospital, she would go to the Langenau Hospital, and she would go to another one down the street from the Langenau One City Line. Well, anyway, one of them gave her AIDS. The university.
What was that again? They gave her what now?
AIDS.
Oh. She contracted HIV/AIDS from the blood transfusion. Yeah.
Right. And how did I find out? Was the University of Pennsylvania doctor told me that it wasn't them that gave her that bad blood. And this is how I found out that she had bad blood from...
What year was that, if I might ask, Perry?
That was in 80...
Yeah.
I think it was 87.
Yeah. A lot of that was going on. I remember very well, Jim, that my sister... At times, as a matter of fact, my love for radio started in particular when one of Philadelphia's old venerable radio stations had a blood drive for my sister because she had to have so many transfusions that they we just had to have it. And so I hesitate to ask this next question, Perry, but how is your daughter?
Well, she passed away because she went to jail, and that's when she passed away.
Yeah, she didn't get the treatment that she needed there.
No, she didn't.
My heart goes out to you.
When I got her body, it was the Undertaker told me, you don't want to see her. She looked like she was a football player.
Mm.
Her shoulders, she was in so much such pain that she cramped her body up.
Yeah, cramping and so forth. And I'm watching Jim and Perry. You know, first of all, you have our sympathies, and Jim, this is the kind of thing that keeps you moving forward with this. I mean, you're at a point in life now you could retire somewhere at the south of France and go off and live your life, but you keep moving forward so that you don't have to hear stories like this.
But I couldn't sell my paintings, so why should I retire?
Yeah. Perry, thank you for your call, and we're so sorry for your loss.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
There's also bone marrow transplantation, which is a very complicated procedure, and it doesn't usually work for more than a year or two.
Yeah.
And that also has the danger of transmitting infection. It's very sad.
We continue on with our phone calls. It's now 22 minutes away from the hour of 7 o'clock here at AM 900. We go now to Gwen. Gwen, thank you for your call. I do believe in Harrisburg. Thank you for calling, Gwen, and welcome to the show.
In Harrisburg, and thanks for taking my call.
It's a pleasure to have you.
I actually have sickle cell disease, but I'm also a physician. And, I've obviously kept up for a variety of reasons on the research, et cetera. And I absolutely agree with Mr. Kaplan about the fact, a lot of the barriers to him getting a well-designed study done in the United States. I'm not really surprised that he's had some challenges with that, partly not being a part of the medical community, but also the financial issues in terms of big pharma and the complex processes in the in institutions that do research. But what I wanted to also comment on was I did look at the study that you had published. I can't remember when it was, but was it truly double blind? And I don't want to speak to...
Well, people come into the emergency room in sickle cell crisis.
Okay. Yeah, I understand that. Let me explain the specifics of my question. You obviously randomized people to either standard of care treatment when they were admitted,
right,
and those that received the ozone oxygen treatment.
That's right.
So, and from what I could gather from the study, that was intrarectally?
Yes, because the vasculature of the sickle cell patients is so...
I understand that.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I know that there's probably a lot.
No, I'm just sitting here in high cotton listening to two people talk really mature and intricate stuff. And I'm just grateful for the education. Please continue, doctor.
Okay. And so the reason I'm asking that question is, did the group that was the control group get a placebo interrectal treatment?
They did not. So okay. In that sense, no.
Okay. And that's why I was asking the question about was it truly...
I see where you're coming from. Yeah.
And so what I would like to stay in touch, and I'm not going to obviously give my information over the phone.
Well, I'll tell you what, we can take it off the air if that would be okay with you.
That would be fine because we have a good community here in Harrisburg that are interested in some creative ideas in terms of treating sickle cell disease, but don't always have the resources, but potentially maybe I could facilitate something and maybe we can finally get something going. I don't know.
The first thing I would say to you, for virtually no expense, I can show you how to treat the blood in a laboratory of a sickle cell patient. That should have been the first step at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia 24 years ago. I had equipment that I gave them. I was there every Thursday with Dr. Bernard Kirschbaum, who was a very brilliant head of dermatology at Medical College of Pennsylvania, and I couldn't get them to do a simple blood test. And quite frankly, without getting too emotional, I've reached an age where the gloves are off. You want to play, you want to fight, you got the right guy, I'll fight you. Because I can't stand it anymore. Guys can go out and play golf two times a week. They can go on vacations to Europe whenever they please and so forth. You got people who are being crucified in their beds with sickle cell disease. And I'm going to play rough ball with them. I don't know if they're used to it. I don't know if they ever played football or had a street fight. But I can teach them a little bit about that.
Well, Gwen, and I'll call you Dr. Gwen. First of all, I just want to thank you so much for reaching out to us from Harrisburg. And I'm really looking forward to see what your collaboration and your discussions with Jim will yield. Can you hold the line for a moment so we can get your information?
I can. Can I make one more comment?
You absolutely can.
And I just want, and this is really more for those that may be listening, as well as, I don't know if Jim is aware of this, but there is a wide spectrum of severities in sickle cell disease, and that is not recognized. I've met people who have the disease who have literally never been hospitalized with a painful crisis.
Wow.
As well as, obviously, people who are in the hospital. I mean, I've treated patients that are in the hospital every month or more than every month. Even for myself, I mean, I have a lot of complications from the disease. I have exceeded expectations in terms of life expectancy. I wasn't supposed to be able to be a physician, et cetera, et cetera. But there is a wide severity. There's a woman here in Harrisburg who's 80 years old. Now, she does have a lot of complications, but she's 80 years old.
80 years old.
She's 80 years old. So there is a wide spectrum, and that's just something that people need to know. And severity can be at all ends of the spectrum. And put that out there.
Well, will you be willing to come back and talk to us as you guys go on so that we can hear more about how things go?
Absolutely.
We're going to get your information right now. I really want to thank you. And who said that nothing good comes out of Harrisburg these days? Thanks so much. Gwen, hold the phone for us, doctor, and we'll get your information so that you and Jim can be in touch after this program. We'll take a quick pause so that we can make sure that we get that info. We're speaking with Jim Kaplan. Jim is here in the Philadelphia area. He is a captain of industry and an economist by training and by trade. But as a part of his own journey in life, he has discovered an effective treatment for sickle cell anemia that he has proven through tests and research coming out of Cuba. And we're grateful that we are finding some positive conversation here. Jim, there's something that you want to say before we get to our next call, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I don't want to alienate the established medical. I want to work with them. And it's a very simple procedure. I've been at NIH. I work with Dr. Schechter in Building 10, ninth floor, and with Barbara Piknova, his PhD from Moscow State University. We demonstrated that we can raise oxygen partial pressure 30% with no damage to the hemoglobin. I see in sickle, if I might say, Nick.
You might.
I see in sickle cell, in 1905, when Matisse and Picasso and Braque were looking for a way to escape from post-impressionism, they saw trinkets coming in from Africa of these cubist figures. And it is those African figures that became the root of cubism. And from cubism came what we call modern art. Well, this has certain significance for me because sickle cell disease is a simple disease with a relatively simple treatment. But that treatment will be applicable to diabetic gangrene and for aging. The Queen Mother of England lived to 104. Prince Charles, as I understand it, in around when she was about 90, brought an Italian physician into Buckingham Palace so that she could be treated with ozone oxygen. She was a viable woman until 103 years of age. In Cuba, I came to know the prima ballerina of the Cuban National Ballet. She was then an instructor, Alicia Alonso. She was in her 70s, and she got treated every 2 weeks with ozone oxygen to give her the energy to keep up with her ballet company. So these applications that we will eventually make with sickle cell disease will have a spinoff to the entire population.
Let's get back to our final two phone calls for Jim Kaplan. Mark in Elkins Park, we thank you so much for your patience, and we welcome you to our conversation.
Okay. Hi, Nick, and hello to your guest, Jim Kaplan.
How you doing, Mark?
Hi.
Hello. I just had two quick questions. Now I don't suffer from sickle cell anemia, but I want to know, one, is this a type of oxygen therapy or chelation therapy?
No, it is not. It's the introduction of ozone oxygen, a medical grade of oxygen that is put through an electric field, and it becomes O3 rather than O2.
O3 than O2.
Yeah.
Okay. And two is, I guess, to have oxygenated blood or to just have more oxygen on a daily basis, is that good for everyone for their blood system?
No, because oxygen has a downside, too. There are free radicals that can be generated and so forth. So you can't overtax the body with free radicals. It so happens when ozone oxygen is used, it stimulates the production of superoxide dismutase, glutathione, and so forth, which deal with the free radicals. But I wouldn't overdo it. I wouldn't suggest it as a general treatment. And I, for one, have never taken it out of the establishment. I want it in the establishment so that people can avail themselves of all of the university medicine that is available to them.
Okay. All right. And as to your previous call, Nick, that was a very great conversation that enlightened myself and I take it, a lot of people in your audience.
Well, you know what? I come to this microphone every day realizing that I'm going to be educated, and today has taken me way beyond my own expectations. Mark, are you in the medical profession? You were.
I try to say like Glenn Ellis. I'm not a doctor, but I do have a lot of medical enthusiasts.
Well, Mark, it's a pleasure to have you on board. Now, I appreciate your joining us in conversation today.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Final call, rather, comes from, is it final call? I think it is final call. Comes from Sister D in the far west part of Philadelphia. Sister D, thank you for calling and welcome to the program.
Thank you, and peace and blessings to you and your guests.
Thank you, Sister D. It's good to hear your voice.
Thank you, and first I would like to say to you, sir, thank you so very much for having the determination to come forth with the information that the universe sent to you. I thank you so very much.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me.
You are so welcome. And I'd like to say also, and Nick, you can help with this, I think it would really be important for this gentleman to be in touch with Zamoria Brandon, who heads up the Sickle Cell Anemia Organization here in Philadelphia. Also, I don't know if this gentleman has ever heard of Dr. Paul Brown Bodice. He is a naturopath, and I do believe he's out of the country at this time. But he did develop a hands-on massage therapy that was very helpful for the pain of sickle cell anemia. I don't have the sister's name in my head right at this time, but there's also a doctor here in Philadelphia, and she has sickle cell, and she made use of that therapy for herself and for others. But I would like to say for the audience and all that has ears to hear what this gentleman has said about the medical profession, and I will say it for him because he can't really say it. The medical profession here in this nation has a long, ugly history of running interference with, of telling tales on, of denying opportunities, and even, I will say, because this is another known fact, of assassinating people who go against some of what they present to the public as being for the public's best welfare in relation to medical situations. As a people, we have to find these things out, and we must stand up for ourselves and for our guests today so that all of these, different opportunities can be brought to the people. And Nick, I will give you this information quickly now.
Okay.
It's a website, and see, I believe, like I talk about the universe and the creator, I'd gotten this information over a decade ago.
Real quickly, because we're right up against the clocks today.
Go on the website, drmarysmonkey.com. drmarysmonkey.com. The information that's on there will astonish you, and it talks about things related to the polio vaccine, eugenics, and all of these things that are impacting on the people in a negative way.
Sister D, it's always a pleasure talking to you, and thank you so much for your call. Appreciate that. Well, folks, look, we are really up against the clock. In just about another few minutes, we'll be tossing the microphone into the capable hands of Morgan Rhodes, who will take you into the evening with the Rhythmic Caravan. But we spent the last hour speaking with Jim Kaplan. Jim has devoted this portion of his life to pushing and agitating and cajoling, trying to get the medical community to recognize that there is a treatment that can ease the suffering of sickle cell patients. I want to be careful in what we're saying, Jim, so that people will not hear you saying that you found the cure for the disease. What you found is a way to alleviate the suffering of the patients.
That is correct. There is no solution to a genetic issue except for the hope that maybe at some point in the future you can change the genetic nature of the patient. So this is strictly a means of, one, treating the crisis to reduce the length of time of the crisis. Second, to treat the ulcers and heal the ulcers that are often presented with this disease. And the third is to treat prophylactically so that the people don't go into crisis. And that's an outpatient procedure, shouldn't run more than $35. I don't know if you can get anything in America for $35 anymore.
Hard to get a sandwich nowadays for $35.
Right, that's right.
Well, if somebody was listening and they couldn't get in today and they wanted to try to reach out to you, and to say, listen, I'd like to follow up on your studies, or I'd like to help you to find a way to get this into the clear light of day. How can they reach you, Jim?
All right, there are two ways. My email is jacapp7@gmail.com. That is jacapp7@gmail.com. And the other means would be, you send me a P.O. Box 14, Rosemont, P.A., R-O-S-E-M-O-N-T, P.A., 19010. And I would love to speak with those who are in the medical profession. It's interesting. When I spoke at Children's Hospital in 1993, it was the nurses who stood up and asked me questions.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, I also spoke in Nizhny Novgorod, Russia, in 1995, and the Russians had more interest in sickle cell disease, even though they don't have an African-American population, than I find amongst the physicians here. And there were six members of the Russian Academy of Science listening to my talk. So I think we've got a long way to go in this country.
Well, this won't be the last time that we talk. I'm really interested to see what happens when you and Dr. Gwynn put your heads together. We will follow up on this and follow up on your research. And more than anything else, I think it's heroic of you to keep pushing when most people would simply figure out a way to go somewhere, do their painting, enjoy their art, and get a nice glass of wine and a good view of a piece of water somewhere. Jim, it's always a pleasure talking to you, and I'm really grateful that you came in today.
Nick, it's a pleasure. I want to thank Lorena Nixon again for her courageous introduction. Who knew where it was going to go?
Absolutely. Well, if you knew Lorraine, Lorraine, she's going to make sure something happens. This program, this part of our program was assisted by Lorraine Nixon, who made this introduction. Lorraine, thank you so much for what you have done to bring this information to those who are listening today.
Be sure to listen to Nick Taliaferro right here, Monday through Thursday, 4 p.m. till 7 p.m. on 900 AM WURD and 900 AM WURD.com.
From 4 o'clock to 7, I'm your little slice of heaven. I'm your radio reverend.